This is Moan versus Northwest Educational Service District. Morning.
Good morning. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, please. I'm Bill Coates. I'm the attorney for Northwest Educational Service District. The magistrate granted our appeal from a denial of a motion for summary judgment on this case. The facts are succinctly set forth in her opinion, and we believe accurately so.
So the issue is whether the court erred in ruling as a matter of law. Well, yeah, that's what you argue, but whether the court erred in ruling there were material issues of fact. And you argue there are no material issues of fact. It's a question of law whether, on this record, Ms. Moan has identified the statutes that meet the requirement for clarity.
It's really a twofold argument, Judge. That is one of the arguments and a primary argument. The second is this, in any conceivable way, a constructive discharge, and that no reasonable jury could conclude this was a constructive discharge.
Do we need to reach that if we resolve the first question?
I don't believe you need to reach that to resolve the first question. Usually, if somebody resigns, I would say you don't reach the question of whether it was a violation of public policy unless you determine the resignation is a constructive discharge. And so usually it goes in the opposite direction. In this case, you know, Ms. Moan was employed to oversee work pursuant to a grant that was given to the ESD to provide drug alcohol services. School districts applied for it, and the grant was her employment, and where she carried out the grant was in Marysville Middle School. She had a dispute with the principal in Marysville Middle School over the timing of the grant. To understand the logistics, you know, she's in Marysville Middle School. The Educational Service District oversees 35 districts in Northwest Washington, and their administrative offices are in Anacortes. When this became apparent, they sent their administrators and her supervisor down to work with the district, thought they'd worked it out. And then a few days later, they get a call from the office and the principal, and she's in the office. It's a Friday, March 28th. And she says, I cannot work. I'm not going to provide the program under these conditions. I don't believe it's ethical to do so. The Educational Service District at that point placed her on administrative leave with pay and told her the following Monday to report to the administrative offices for an investigative conference. And with respect to the concept of a constructive discharge, the ESD has an interest in two respects. Number one, do we have an employee who's acting inappropriately such that it's a disciplinary occurrence? Number two, it's a grant, and if we don't fulfill the grant, we can lose that funding.
But if we look at the claim of wrongful discharge in violation of public policy,
correct.
It's my understanding that the Supreme Court in the Korsland case specifically addressed the question of whether if a plaintiff could not meet the burden for a wrongful discharge in violation of public policy, that then we would not reach the constructive discharge issue.
And that's fine. I mean, we think that's an extremely strong argument. And
well, whether it's an argument or not, I mean, that's what the case says.
That's what the case says, and as it applies to this case, we think that they identified a series of statutes that they say somehow are implicated in this.
And I understand that there were certain statutes identified below with the trial court at summary judgment, and then there were other statutes that were identified in the motion for discretionary review. So if you could separate those when you address
But none of the statutes at all apply to this situation. They are simply not relevant. You know, two of the statutes talk about developing a safety plan or developing, a curriculum or policies. They weren't even supposed to be completed until the following school year after she resigned her position. Some of them apply to OSBI. The other statutes are kind of general statutes that says the ESD is to provide information to school districts, that it has authority to affect federal funds. Let me make clear, there is no legislatively established statute or judicial decision that says, A, that you have to have a drug alcohol program in any of these schools. Most school districts and most buildings, particularly at the middle school level, do not have a drug alcohol counselor. Number two, if you do have a drug alcohol counselor, they are not required to use a particular curriculum. Here, the ESD had adopted a curriculum Project Success. Number three, there's no judicially
recognized. What statutes are you referring to?
There is no statute.
So
is
you're,
the point.
What is the basis of your argument?
These are uniquely educational decisions about whether you spend these funds. This is part of a grant that goes to that the ESD oversees. The curriculum they choose is done by the educators. And then there's no judicially or legally recognized standard about how that's to be taught. And that is, again, a uniquely educational decision to oversee that, not one that a judge, a jury, or the legislature has intervened.
What about OSP? Are they involved in this?
OSPI is the ultimate administrator of the grant. The funds, the ESD is an intermediary between the local district and OSPI.
Right.
And so the money comes into the ESD that goes to the school.
So are there any statutes that that address what OSPI could or couldn't do in their role related
they have general
to this?
Authority. They have general authority to oversee the educational programs, to accept federal and state funds, to administer those funds, to
Do they have a responsibility to ensure that if there is a program on drug and alcohol, and that there will be no risk of harm to the students?
I'm going to answer it this way. There's no rule or statute that governs that. That they have an obligation to ensure that funds are spent and consistent with that program. In fact, in this case, when there was a problem, there's consultation between the ESD and OSBI, over the, what to do with this program. And in fact, they reached an agreement concerning that. But that's not, when you look at it, the public policy, it's a judicially or legislative created. Those are uniquely educational decisions that are vested in OSBI, the ESD, and the local district.
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Rod Moody. I represent Ms. Moen in this matter. The point,
I think what would be most helpful would be for you to identify what statutes you are asserting violate public policy.
Revised Code of Washington, 28A, 320, 125. The legislature considers it a matter of public safety for public schools and staff to have current safe school plans and procedures in place fully consistent with federal law. That is incorporated in RCW 28A 320.127, which is the plan for recognition, screening, and response to emotional and behavioral distress in students, which is exactly what Project Success is about.
Now, before you get there, as I understand it, 28A 320.127 was not in effect when Ms. Moen resigned. Do you concede that?
I do not concede that. That's absolutely correct. That statute was adopted in 2013. The statute says beginning in the 2014-15 school year, each school district must adopt a plan for recognition, et cetera. But what we're talking about here is the policy, the fact that you have to have the plan that is identified for the 2014 school year. Doesn't mean that the policy of 125, which specifically is referenced in paren 3 of 127, when it says the plan under this section may be a separate plan or a component of another district plan or policy, such as the harassment, intimidation, and bullying prevention policy under RCW 28A 300-2851, or the comprehensive school plan required under RCW 28A 320-125, which is why I let off that. This statute, 125, which is adopted in 2008, is specifically referenced and incorporated into 127, as is 28A300.2851, School Bullying and Harassment Work Group. The Office of the Superintendent of Public Instruction and the Office of the Education Ombuds shall convene a work group on school bullying and harassment prevention to develop, recommend, and implement strategies to improve school climate and create respectful learning environments in all public schools in Washington. That's in 2011. All of these statutes are being incorporated into, through what I pointed out, 28A.3.21.27, which is specifically referencing these two. Now, you talk about the distinction of what was raised at the lower court, what was raised at the higher court. The mistake that I made is when I was referencing to 127 at the lower court, I forgot to specifically point the court to parent 3, which pulls in 125 and 2851. The statutes were referenced because the statute which incorporates those two statutes was specifically identified.
Do you think if there's any statute that directs a body to do a particular act, that that becomes a public policy that would be protected such that it's a clearly mandated state policy? So any statute that says, you know, Department of Agriculture is to do this or Department of Education is to do that, that's a sufficient statement of state policy to bring your client within this issue.
Any may be overly broad, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. I would agree. But when I look at 125, that specifically states the legislature considers it a matter of public safety mm-hmm. or public schools to do the following,
okay.
which is then incorporated into through 127. So I would respectfully submit to you, Judge Spearman, that in fact, in this particular individual case, because 125, I'm sorry, the statutes get a little crazier when you're looking at them, because 125 is specifically being referenced by the legislature. We consider this to be, you know, public safety issue. That is a public policy in this particular case.
Help me understand how it's a public safety issue. Doesn't that statute go to, like, protecting students from bullying and harassment and I suppose, racial, gender discrimination and so forth? I mean, education is always going to involve some sort of emotional challenge to a student. I'm trying to figure out how we would get our hands around what the public policy is.
Here's how you do that. 125, I will agree with the court, is broadly drafted so that you're correct in that sense. If you just read 125 by itself, you may not get to that point. But the fact that the legislature in 2013 in 28A.3.21.27 incorporated that into the statute's plan for recognition, screening, and response to emotional or behavioral distress in students, which is exactly what Project Success is.
Now, you don't think it makes any difference that 1271 applied to the 2014 school year?
I think the policy is established prior to that. Yes, the statute and the legislature has set out you will do this by the 2014 school year. I understand that's afterwards. That I certainly concede. I mean, I can't deny that. But the policy, and on a motion for summary judgment, I want
to... So how does that policy relate to the decision to resign, your client's decision to resign?
That relates to my client's decision to resign because then we get to the constructive discharge component of this. And that is, of course, a question of fact. Keeping in mind, this is a motion for summary judgment here. And my client found herself in a situation where she had the proverbial choice, the Hobson's choice of, I continue to work and I protect my job, or I place these children at emotional risk of harm.
So that's the 1271. The emotional risk of harm statute that you're reciting is 1271.
Develop a model school district plan for recognition, initial screening, response to emotional behavioral distress in students, including but not limited to substance abuse, violence, youth suicide, which is exactly what Project Success is doing. And it is conceded by Jody Despiens for the NWESD that to, in fact, teach Project Success in the amount of time that was permitted to my client, in the manner that she was directed to, caused a potential risk of emotional harm to every one of these children. That is the reason, that's the choice my client had. I teach this manner in the way I've been taught with best practices, which is also identified in the statute, and I protect myself, or I go out and I instruct these children and I cause potential risk of emotional harm to them. And that is not just her subjective belief that's being stated here conveniently for the purposes of meeting the element of some cause of action. Ms. Desbiens admits, yes, if you teach Project Success in the manner in which it should have been instructed, you create the risk of emotional harm to these children because they will not have the time to process emotionally the information that is provided to them by the conclusion of the school year. So it's acknowledged that, yes, these children were at risk if my client taught Project Success in the manner in which she was instructed. This is not a scenario in which it's just an inconvenient work environment or there's pictures of playgirls up on the wall that we don't like. This is a situation where my client was faced with the choice of protect myself or potentially risk children. And she said, I'm not going to harm these children. So she resigned her position. That is constructive discharge. That's a factual question for a jury. Judge Okrin said.
Was there any evidence of actual risk?
There's an admission by Jody Desbiens that
potential.
Hurt. Correct.
Potential.
The potential, yes.
But there's no evidence of actual risk.
Well, I'm not quite sure how to answer that. I mean, NWESD has admitted, yes, you teach this course in this manner, you are potentially causing risk of harm to these children.
Okay.
That's acknowledged. It's not just my client who's saying that. So I would respectfully submit that Judge Okrin was entirely correct when he says that's a factual question for a jury. And I don't believe that that is subjective to objective evidence, as is being argued essentially here in return. So respectfully, on a motion for summary judgment, I have a burden of production. I don't have to persuade anybody of anything at this level. And at this point in time, when we incorporate all of these statutes I have produced and shown you, that is in fact a public policy on this specific point. They didn't have to adopt Project Success, but they did. And when they adopted, now essentially they say, now we want to wash our hands of it and walk away. And well, we taught some other course and we taught some life skills and all that in place. All well and good, but they adopted Project Success. Project Success that it be taught with fidelity, that it be taught with best practices. That's in the statute. My client was faced with a choice. I cannot teach this with best practices without causing risk of harm to children, and I'm not going to do that. So she quit her job. I would respectfully submit that meets the elements of constructive discharge, and we've produced and shown the court that there's a public policy that is involved.
Thank you.
Thank you.
A school district or an educational service district is limited to what the legislature directs them to do. There has to be a statute, or their authority has to be reasonably applied. If you take this argument, there is no specific statute that requires there to be a drug-alcohol program.
Well, I think you have to address 1271, and I think you have to address the testimony of Ms.
Well, 1271 says each school district must adopt a plan for recognition and initial screening and response, and that goes to the school district, not the ESD. Let's start there. Number two, you know, this has nothing to do with that. You know, this is a counselor who is saying that I don't think that the school district and the ESD, or I don't think I can teach this with fidelity. The ESD and her problem was with the school district. What the ESD did is call her in for an investigative conference. It did not take any disciplinary action concerning her. It did not contact, eventually it did contact the school district. But she resigned before the investigation was complete. The ESD did exactly what it was supposed to do, is bring her in and find out what's going on in the school district. It has an interest in doing that, not only from an employment standpoint, but also to protect this grant. Conceivably, they could have agreed with the employee and said, okay, that's the point on the constructive discharge. It never got there. We never completed the investigation. We never said, you know, we work with the school districts. We don't have authority over them. But when they take a grant, you can go to the school district and say you need to do something. In fact, when they did look at this, they sent another employee of the ESD there who taught the course and carried over into the next year, which is permissible under the grant, and it was fine.
So what about the testimony? What about the testimony of Ms. DeBenz?
Well, the question was, you know, if you taught it in this time frame.
What is this time frame?
The time frame that this was, you know, this was going on in March between then and the end of June,
right,
and completed the program. In fact, when the ESD got involved and met with the school district, The program's divided into parts. I believe it, I can't remember, it's three or four parts.
But you admit that she said that it had the potential of causing.
If you taught it in the time frame of April through June. In fact, the program carried over into the next year. There was no risk. You know, we did not believe there was none.
Is that in the
harm.
Record that it carried over the next year?
I believe it is. But irrespective of that, the fact that an employee comes in and says, I think it creates risk to students, you know, that does not implicate any statute. That's her opinion. Maybe you can get other educators that would agree with that. This isn't meant to be a swearing contest between educators. This is a decision that's left to the educators. We're asking you to trust the school district, the ESD, to properly administer the program. This is an employee at will. There is no judicially or legislatively created public policy here. That, you know, and she's going way beyond that. You know, she's saying, well, this deals with safety. That's a public policy. She's saying, this is the curriculum, and I, you know, the public policy she has to get to is, I get to teach it my way. That's simply not the law.
Thank you. The next case.